Hello, I'm Jacob Kruger, and this is the Write Your Screenplay podcast. This week, we're going to be looking at Alex Garland's new film, Civil War. Civil War is essentially Apocalypse Now in America, except the heart of darkness that these characters are entering into in their journey into the madness of war is the horror of polarization, of how close our country is to the brink, and the horror of what it means when we stop looking at each other as human beings and instead as enemies. One of the interesting choices that Civil War makes is to watch the story through the eyes of journalists. And there's a reason for this. Alex Garland believes that real journalism, unbiased journalism, journalism that takes the photograph and allows you to make your decision rather than trying to push an agenda one or the other. He believes that that form of journalism, which many of us feel is lost in America today, is the antidote to the kind of polarization that creates this kind of horror. Now, this is not a surprise for any of you who know Alex Garland's work. In fact, he wrote 28 Days Later. But some of the roots of Civil War are actually in zombie movies. In fact, in a way, this film is a hybrid of the structure of The Last of Us and Apocalypse Now. So we're going to be talking a bit about how the film is built, but we're going to be using that conversation to hopefully take the scope of what we're talking about even bigger. Because one of the things you'll notice when you watch Civil War is how hard it is to separate yourself from what is happening and actually watch it analytically. You will notice that you start to get sucked into the film. And this is a concept that a lot of people talk about as suspension of disbelief. But what I'd like to suggest to you is that suspension of disbelief is not a choice the audience makes. We're going to be looking at all that stuff. It's going to be a great ride. Stay tuned. So before we get started, I want to talk to you about a really cool thing that we do at Jacob Kruger Studio. We have a free class called Thursday Night Writes, taught by me and top members of the faculty. You can RSVP at writeyourscreenplay.com/Thursday. Come join our community of writers, and you're going to have an experience that is transformative for your writing. Okay, so let's start by talking about the structure of Civil War. And there are going to be some spoilers ahead. There's no way for me to do this movie justice without giving you some spoilers. So if you have not yet seen the movie and you don't want to know anything that happens, this is a good time to hit pause. The structure of Civil War is a lot like the structure of Apocalypse Now, with a little The Last of Us twist. For those of you who know Apocalypse Now is Francis Ford Coppola's look at the Vietnam War. It is a journey. We're following Willard on this journey into the Heart of Darkness. It's actually an adaptation of Joseph Conrad's book, Heart of Darkness. And it's really Francis Ford Coppola asking the question as we track Willard's descent into madness as he journeys through the horrors of Vietnam. It's his question about trying to make sense of war and trying to make sense of the Heart of Darkness that lives inside of us. And like Apocalypse Now, Civil War does not have that traditional, because of this, that happens, and then because of that, this happens. It doesn't have that traditional narrative structure that we are used to seeing in Hollywood movies. Rather, it's more built like a road trip movie, if the road trip was a journey along the worst road trip of your life. It's really a journey through the landscape of war. And what we're seeing at each stop along this trip, at each stop along this road, is how people are making sense, dealing with, reacting to a society that is falling apart. Now, one of the very interesting choices that Alex Garland makes in the writing of this film is not to tell you what the hell is going on. We only have snippets of what's happened. We know that a president has stayed in office for 3 terms against the will of the American people, or at least against the Constitution, right? We don't know exactly how that happened or why that happened. There's virtually zero exposition, but we know that has happened. When we first meet him, played by Nick Offerman, the president is making a speech, a disinformation speech about their victory, right? And of course, that's not really what is happening. And we know that in the world of Washington, D.C., the press are shot on sight, that the press are seen as enemy combatants in that world. That is all we know. We don't know the president's politics. We don't know if he is left or if he is right or if he is somewhere in between. We don't know if he is a fascist. We don't know if he is a communist. We don't know anything about his point of view except that he has violated the Constitution and that he is against journalism. He is against the truth coming out. We know that America has fractured and that some kind of alliance called the Western Front has been created. In our society, what seems like an impossible alliance, an alliance between California and Texas in opposition to the president. And quite frankly, we don't know what that alliance is about either. We don't actually know their politics. We don't know what they believe in. We don't know if they're liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican, communist or fascist. We don't actually know. But we know that they are fighting against the president trying to retake the country. Now, Alex Garland has come under some fire. Some people have said, this is crazy. California and Texas, they're so far apart politically. This is just ridiculous whitewashing. This is obscuring of the actual political message to avoid offending anyone. And you know that that's something, if you've listened to my Top Gun Maverick Poop podcast, you know that that's something that I criticize that film for. In a way, Alex Garland, you could argue, is following the same roadmap, but for very different purposes. In Top Gun, like in Civil War, the nature of the political conflict, the who the bad guys are, and the what the bad guys are fighting for versus what the good guys are fighting for is completely obscured. And in that film, I think the criticism is actually correct. In that film, it is being obscured so that we can feel good about being Americans. So that left or right, Democrat or Republican, no matter where you fall in the political spectrum, you can watch Top Gun 2 and go, yeah, America. The enemy is faceless. Their agenda is faceless, but also the violence is faceless. In Top Gun 2, we experience violence without experiencing the pain underneath it. We experience the violence like a joy ride, like pure fun. And in Top Gun, who is good? That is us. That is Tom Cruise. And who is bad? That is faceless people in airplanes. And who is dumb? That is anybody in a position of authority. And in that way, what Top Gun does, and you can listen to more about this in my podcast about Top Gun, is it deeply simplifies the political situation we're in order to whitewash and make sure that nobody is offended by this film that needs to gross hundreds of millions of dollars to make its money back. But I would argue that what Alex Garland is doing here in Civil War is so much more complicated. There's a scene at the center of Civil War, the main characters, and we'll talk about more about who they are soon. They have driven into what looks like a kind of Christmas wonderland. There is a giant Santa Claus figurine, and someone starts shooting at them. And they take cover, and in taking cover, they discover two soldiers. And those soldiers, one is literally lying on top of the other with a spyglass, and the other has a sharpshooter rifle. And those soldiers are trying to kill whoever's in the house that's trying to kill them. And it's impossible to tell the political affiliations of these soldiers, right? We know that they are dressed in fatigue, but we don't know if they're WF or they're presidential forces. We know that one of them has dyed hair as a man. We know, so maybe we have some implications with that. We might start to go, oh, maybe I think this is the kind of person that is, but we know nothing about them. And the heroes are reporters who we'll talk more about in a moment. Are trying to figure out what the hell is going on. What's the truth here? What is this all about? And to paraphrase, what's basically said to them is, they're trying to kill us, and we're trying to kill them. And that is all you need to know. And Lee, the reporter at the center of this piece, the wizened old reporter who has seen it all, is trying to get more. And he's basically saying, are you too dumb to get it? Do you not understand my words? They're trying to kill us. We're trying to kill them. This is a completely different move than what is happening in Top Gun. This is actually the writer saying, this is what I believe is actually happening in America right now. Now, this film was written in 2020 and slightly adjusted after the horrific events of January 6th. But what this writer is trying to say is that the actual politics quickly fall away in the polarization of America. When we start to see they're the bad guy and we're the good guy, the philosophical constructs and all of the complexity underneath that instantly starts to fall away. And it simply becomes, we're trying to destroy them. They're trying to destroy us. And pretty soon we descend into the heart of darkness. We descend into the horror of war, where it simply becomes us against them. So the approach that Alex Garland takes in this movie is also to say, hey, I don't want to isolate half of America. I don't want half of America to go, oh, this is liberal propaganda. And I don't want the other half of America to go, hey, this is right-wing propaganda. What I want, or what I believe Alex Garland wants, is for anyone to be able to see this and go, oh my God, I see us in this. I see my country in this. And I mourn. I feel the horror of what is happening to my country in this. What we're watching in Civil War is the emotional conflict that's currently happening in our country, just dialed up from a 5 to a 12. What we're watching is him just turn up the dial on the anger and the hatred that's already happening. And that's part of what makes the film so incredibly, overwhelmingly upsetting, that the problem of the film is growing out of the problem that we are all seeing right now in our politics. Now, let's take that one step further. Let's look at the construction of this thing. So, why are Florida and California connected here? Because it's not about today's politics, right? He's actually making a conscious statement. Don't allow this movie to further polarize you. Rather, what he's trying to do is exactly what Lee, the grizzled photographer, is trying to do. Her belief is that a journalist's job is to take a picture, not to try to influence events, to take a picture and send that truth back home. There's, again, to paraphrase, a line where she basically says she used to believe that every picture she took was just a warning sent back home. Don't do this. But despite all of her pictures, this is what is happening. And I'd like to suggest to you that what Alex Garland is doing is actually taking a picture just like Lee is. He's taking a picture of a potential future. He's taking a picture of January 6th just turned up a little bit, or the outcomes of January 6th if things had gone just a little bit different. He's taking a picture and he's saying, don't do this. And it takes tremendous restraint to build a film like this, right? Because we, as artists, we all want to get up on our soapbox and say, listen to me. I have the answer. This is what I believe. But when you do that, you can often end up leaving behind anyone who already doesn't agree with you, and you lose the power of your film to actually change minds. The difference between what Alex Garland is doing and what Top Gun is doing is that Civil War humanizes everybody. Everybody is a human being. Some are horrific human beings. Some are terrifying human beings. Some are suffering human beings. Everybody is a human being dealing with the horror of this war. And because everyone is humanized, it's the opposite of Top Gun. We're not whitewashing. We're not putting the bad guy in a mask so you can't even tell who they are. We can tell who all of these people are. It's only their politics that are obscured from us. Because civil war is not about politics. And I'd argue that what's happening in our country is not actually about politics either. That what's happening in our country is about polarization, is about seeing those who disagree as the enemy, is about, as Jesse Plemons puts it, what kind of an American are you? As opposed to, we're all Americans, or to take it further, we're all people of the world. This is a film about what happens when you start to search only for the ideas that validate your own opinions. So I'd like to suggest that it takes tremendous restraint for Alex Garland not to repeat those errors in the making of his film. To actually say, no, that's not what it's about. It's not about listen to me. It's about don't do this. It's about putting a little snapshot of what he sees as truth in front of you and allowing you to make your own decision. Okay. The other thing, of course, that should be obvious. In Civil War, we see the blood. We see the horror. And we are horrifically disturbed by everything that is happening, regardless of what side the perpetrators or the victims are on. This, again, is different from Top Gun. This is not a celebration of we're good, you're bad. This is a journey into the heart of darkness that grows out of polarization when people start to see each other as the enemy. Okay. So I mentioned earlier that some of the structure of this film mirrors zombie movies. Because in a way, Apocalypse Now is a zombie movie, just like Civil War is a zombie movie. Zombie movies are set in a world of the collapse of society. And as our characters journey, they encounter different societies where different people deal with the horror of apocalypse in different ways. And they are pursued by different kinds of monsters who are driven by motivations that are not about politics, that are driven by madness. And because this is a journey into madness, into the heart of darkness, following a traditional structure wouldn't make any sense, right? We need to watch these characters land in these different locations and try to make sense of that. Now, that doesn't mean there is not a structure, and we're going to talk about how that structure is built. So at the center of this film, the good guys are journalists. there are three main journalists who we are following. There is Lee, played by Kirsten Dunst, the grizzled, seen everything, haunted by PTSD, tough as nails, war photographer. There is Joel, played by Wagner Moura. Joel is the guy who just loves this. He loves the adventure. He loves the excitement. And he is drunk all the time. And there is Sammy, played by Stephen McKinley Henderson, the old man who is still hanging on, right? That last piece of old journalism, what journalism used to be. And then into this group that cares and knows each other is a young girl, a brand new journalist, Jessie, played by Kaylee Spaney, who has a big dream. Her dream is to become a war photographer. In fact, Jessie is even given an old camera. We're told it's her father's camera. She's given an old camera that is a symbol, of course, of the old journalism. So she is the new generation who Alex Garland sees as the hope that we need, the antidote to this terrible problem. But none of these characters, even though these are the good guys, even though at the center of all this and the primary relationship in the film is between Lee and Jessie. You might recognize this primary relationship because it's just like the primary relationship in The Last of Us. The tough middle-aged guy who's seen it all, who's haunted by PTSD and who will never let anybody close again. And the young, precocious girl that he is stuck with, that he is going to develop a father-daughter relationship with and come to care about more than himself. Well, this is the exact same journey that Kirsten Dunst, Lee, and Jessie, Kaylee Spaney, are going to go on together in this film. A mother-daughter relationship is going to build between the two of them. Where does this conversation begin? It begins with Lee saving Jessie's life while Jessie is trying to document what turns out to be a suicide bombing. And it begins with Lee not wanting Jessie to come along. See, Lee has a strong objective. And this is where we do have that traditional structure. She's got a want. What is her want? Well, it's just like Willard's want. Willard needs to track down the Marlon Brando character in Apocalypse Now. He needs to find him. Lee wants to track down the president. She is going into the heart of darkness, Washington, D.C. She's going into the place where journalists are killed on sight. Because what she wants is an interview. She wants a quote. She wants to understand what's actually going on. You can see the parallel here with Apocalypse Now, right? Trying to make sense of the senseless, trying to make sense of the impossible to understand. These characters are actually driven by the same journey. And Jessie wants to come along and, through her connection with Joel, finds her way onto this trip. Early on, she asks Lee, because Lee basically says, you're going to end up shot and dead. And she asks Lee, will you take my picture when I'm killed? And Lee says, what do you think? So they start this relationship. Lee is going, no, I don't want anything to do with you. You're going to die and you're not my problem. I will just document you like any other war victim. I don't want to build a connection to you. And over the course of the film, we will watch this party of journalists document the different ways, the horrible, the beautiful, the incomplete denial, right? The different ways that people deal with the total collapse of society in the wake of massive polarization and violence. And through that journey, she and Jesse will come to care about one another until we end the film with a total flip of where we started. And there is a major spoiler coming. We start the relationship with Lee basically saying, if they shoot you, I'm just going to take your picture. But at the end of the film, that's actually not what happened. Where we actually build to is that Lee gives her life to save Jesse. They are in the White House. They have found their way into the heart of darkness. And Jesse is taking a picture right in the line of gunfire. And Lee throws her body across Jesse's and takes the bullet for her. And it is not Lee, but Jesse who documents that in photography. And it is not Lee, but Jesse who walks right past the body of the woman who died to save her to go document that last moment with the president. What we have here is not a story of four perfect journalists fighting against baddies. It is not Top Gun. It's so much more complicated. It is a descent into madness for all of them. We are watching Jesse go from the wide-eyed young girl to the dehumanized person whose only drive is to document. In fact, early on in the film, in one of their first stops, they just stopped to get gas. And Jesse discovers men hung by their hands, covered in blood, still alive, being tortured by the men at the gas station. Supposedly they're looters. We don't even know. And one of the gas station attendants, who is, of course, armed with a gun, puts it on Jesse. What do you want me to do with them? Should I shoot them now? Should I torture them more? Right? He's playing a little game with her, a little dark, complicated game. And she is so overwhelmed that she cannot even speak. And she gets back to the truck and she is beating herself up. What if she could have saved their lives? What if she could have done something? What if she could have changed something where she couldn't even respond? Maybe she could have saved their lives. And she's told by Lee and by the other journalists, you can't do that. You can't ask those questions. You can only take the picture. Your job is just to take the picture. And I would suggest this is the internal war inside of Alex Garland. Of course, Alex Garland, just like all of us, has a political thing they want to say. And he has to move himself to a place where he is just going to take the picture and allow the audience to judge for themselves, where he is not going to try to change your mind. He's just going to show you the consequences if you choose to do this. And so she starts at this place where she is emotionally connected to other human beings. And even though she ends in a more effective place, it's a dehumanized place where she struggles to connect and care. In other words, she becomes Lee. Lee goes on the opposite journey. Lee goes from the place of being so tough that nothing can touch her, even though we get snapshots of how she is haunted by PTSD from her past experiences, to going through a total breakdown. A total mental breakdown that, of course, is similar to Kurt's. And finally, to actually caring about another human being more than she cares about the shot, her job, her mission, her purpose. And we watch Joel, the Wagner-Moura character. We watch Joel go from loving this and riding the adrenaline high to confronting the meaninglessness of his work. Another spoiler ahead. After Sammy's death, Joel gets word that the Capitol has fallen. He has lost his mentor. His mentor has given his life. We'll talk more about why and when. His mentor has given his life. And Joel realizes they're not going to get the interview. The president's going to be dead. The Capitol is going to fall. And that Sammy gave his life for nothing. And so he goes on a journey from loving the wild ride, the adrenaline rush of this experience, to contemplating and confronting the meaninglessness of his life. Finally, let's talk about Sammy. So remember, Sammy represents the old guard. He represents what journalism used to be, but he is too old. He is not nimble enough. He is not built for this new world, despite his incredible instincts and his desire to hold on and his love for what he does. There's a wonderful scene where the news truck realizes there is another SUV coming up on them really, really fast. And they don't know what to do. They're not fast enough to outrun it. So all they can do is allow it to pull up to the side. And when that truck pulls up to the side, we get a moment that in vague ways is reminiscent of, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory. We're given this joyride. If you remember Apocalypse Now, the scene where they're surfing on the beach, and we're finding this unexpected joy inside of the horror. So we have this relationship pulled right out of The Last of Us. The grizzled person who only cares about the mission, finding this connection with a girl that she doesn't want to even have to deal with, but that she's going to come to care for more than herself. We have that relationship at the center. We have seen ugliness upon ugliness mirroring and outdoing that first scene at the gas station that I told you about, getting worse and worse and worse. And then we have this moment, bang, we're suddenly, in a disturbing way, we are compelled by joy. These guys are having the time of their life. They are friends of our journalists. They're two Asian journalists. They are friends of the party. And they do this wild scene where they switch cars at high speed, where they jump out the window into one car. And Jesse loves it so much, she wants to do it. So she jumps out of the window into the other car. And that car speeds off ahead. And Lee loses track of her. And she is scared for her. Moments later, they discover the car. It's at the side of the road. The doors are open and no one is inside. And they find Jesse and one of the Asian journalists. They are on their knees at gunpoint. Jesse Plemons, a guy dressed in army fatigues, who knows what side he's on, is dumping bodies into a mass grave, covering them with lye. And it seems pretty clear that Jesse and this journalist are probably going to be the next victims. The journalists, Lee and Joel, and the other Asian journalist, they decide that they are going to try to save her. They're going to go try to impress upon this man, we are press. Maybe he doesn't know. After all, he is in military fatigues. Politically, he is supposed to respect, they think, maybe, the safety of the press. And Sammy, who's been here before, knows better. He knows that this is certain death. The team comes down to parlay. Joel talks to the Jesse Plemons character, and he says, we're journalists, we're American. And this is the moment where Jesse says, what kind of American? He executes one of the Asian journalists, and then he forces each of these journalists to tell them where he is from. And again, we're in this crazy polarized America. And then he forces each of our journalists to tell him where they are from. And remember, we are in this crazy polarized America where we don't even know what is right and wrong or who is on what side. Joel admits he is from Florida. and it's impossible to tell if the Jesse Plemons character thinks that Florida is American or not. Jesse, with Lee's urging to tell him, admits that she is from Missouri. And Jesse Plemons agrees Missouri is American. Lee tells him where she is from. And then finally, the last Asian journalist needs to speak. And at the moment that he finally, through his terror, gets the word out that he is from Hong Kong, he is executed. That's China, Jesse Plemons says. And this is as close to a political message about what side the bad guys are on. We know the bad guys are on the side of racism, but we don't even know which bad guy side the Jesse Plemons character is on, or if he has just totally gone rogue and doing his own thing. All we know is that he has his view of who we are and who the other is. And in his view, the other deserves to die. And just when it looks like the rest of these journalists may get executed as well, Sammy runs down Jesse Plemons and one of the other bad guys with the press SUV. And you can see this is a central metaphor in the piece. This is the central metaphor of old school press saving the day. And he allows them to escape, but he is shot and bleeds out. And it's with the loss of Sammy that our group arrives at this camp, a WF camp. And this is the first time we've known what side anybody is on. We've seen all different ways of dealing with it. We've seen torture. We've seen a camp where young people seem to be giving food and aid to those who have been displaced. We have seen a town that's pretending like nothing's happening, where all the shops are still selling stuff, and where our crew goes shopping in the middle of this horror, in one of the most surrealistic scenes, using something totally naturalistic to feel surrealistic against the world. We have seen a shootout where a black man in army fatigues, we don't know what side he is on, is stuck behind a column and cannot get back behind the wall to safety to his friends without being shot by snipers up ahead. We have seen the Christmas decoration area shootout. We have seen all these different ways of dealing with the madness, not knowing whose side anybody's on, until finally we get to this WF encampment. And now we know whose side we're on. Except it seems like it is all for nothing. This brings us to the final action sequence of Civil War. And that final action sequence is not played for fun, right? It is not played for adrenaline pumping adventure and excitement. It is not Top Gun. That final scene is played for horror, because even though we are on the side of the good guys, what we are watching is just absolutely terrifying war violence as the WF fight through the Capitol to kill the president. And with them, of course, are Lee and Joel and Jesse. And for us, the audience, the choice to shoot this final horrific sequence at the Capitol is one of the things that makes the piece feel so real and makes it hit too close to home and makes it so upsetting and makes us want to weep for our country, because we are haunted as we watch it by images that could have been shot on January 6th, just turned up in volume just a little bit. if things had just played out a little bit differently, it might have looked like this. And we are watching brutal violence and murder and horror. And just like Apocalypse Now, the film builds towards a final moment, a last word that's supposed to make sense of everything. In Apocalypse Now, those last words are the horror in Civil War. The president is on the ground. The WF has their guns on them, and Joel says, stop. I need a quote. And what the president says is, don't let them kill me. And Joel says, that will do. And then we watch the president executed. I just want you to think about that for a moment. Because in a way, those words are doing exactly what the horror does in Apocalypse Now. They're a reiteration of that experience that we had in with those soldiers. They're trying to kill us. We're trying to kill them. Nothing else matters. They're words that at once expose the fear and the cowardice and the need for survival, the struggle for survival against the other that is driving all of this. And also the impossibility of actually making sense of any of it, right? Even those last words deprive us of a political complexity, of an emotional complexity, of an understanding, of a making sense about why all this happened. Those last words boil it down to what we've been seeing the whole time. They're trying to kill us, and we're trying to kill them. What kind of American are you? So we don't have a traditional narrative structure here. We don't have a plot that is being driven by the characters. Rather, we have characters driven by a profound, difficult want on a road trip movie. A super dark, almost famous. A non-zombie version of The Last of Us. An Apocalypse Now journey with love at the center of it. We have, at each stop, they experience a different way that people are dealing with things that do not make sense, are dealing with the horror, the heart of darkness of war. At each stop, even though the things that are happening are not caused by, brought about by them. It's not cause-effect. It's madness. At each stop, their relationship shifts. Whether that is Lee being pushed to try on a dress in the town where everyone's living as if no war is happening. Or the shift from, are you going to take a picture of me when I'm shot? Jesse asking Lee, to Lee taking a bullet for Jesse, and Jesse simply documenting. So each of these characters is going to go on an emotional journey in relation to the plot, even though we're not in a traditional narrative structure where the plot is brought about by the choices of the characters. Rather, we're in this descent into madness with this beautiful relationship at the center of it. And what makes it feel real? What makes you suspend your disbelief? What makes you suspend your disbelief in this case is the writer's restraint of his own desire to get on a soapbox. We're not going to talk about the incredible directorial choices here. The directorial choices that Alex Garland is making are brilliant. And they're based on, if you've taken my Write Your Screenplay class, the isolated visual moments of action that do hypnotize us as a reader and feel real. But there's something going on beyond that. Because when we can feel the author's voice, what happens is we remember it's not real. Remember, there's somebody trying to convince us. There's someone trying to manipulate us. There's someone trying to push us. But when you step back and say, I believe in my truth so much that I believe if I just show you, you will get it. When you force yourself to get off of your soapbox and actually make something that somebody who disagrees with you can also see and understand and connect with. When you decide, I'm not going to fight polarization with polarization. I'm going to fight polarization with humanity. This is what allows us to believe. And there's a really brilliant way that Alex Garland captures this. Visually, we keep on getting these shots, these photographs that Jesse is taking interspersed with the action of Civil War. And those little snapshots build a reality as if we're in photojournalism, as if this is really happening. So what I'd like to suggest to you as we kind of finish this journey is that the key to getting your audience to suspend their disbelief, the key to hypnotizing your audience and allowing them to believe, be moved by, and changed by what they see, does not come from arguing a point, getting on your soapbox, or telling people they're wrong. It comes from allowing yourself to see the humanity in all different kinds of people, to capture the visual images you see with as much specificity as you can, and to send that snapshot home. If you're enjoying this podcast and getting a lot out of it, please write us a 5-star review wherever you stream your podcast. You are our marketing. You keep this podcast alive. So thank you so much for your support.